some old people from the 60s. I'm talking to one tomorrow, and he says he was one of the first people to start it. So I'm excited to talk.
Oh, really?
To him. Yeah.
That's very exciting.
Yeah. Oh, we'll get to hear his take on it. The people I've talked to weren't one of the people who started it, but just people who were involved in the beginning.
That's right. You know, we continually get requests from people, some of them as devoted as you, others, you know, just kind of more curiosity about the history of the Guardians. Always a student who, on some level or another, whether it's a master's thesis or just kind of like, you know, a little undergrad research kind of thing, wants to know about the history of the Guardians. And we're always like, all these people keep asking us. Some of them must be finding something. And if we had it, we'd give it to somebody else. But we never seem to get a copy of whatever it is.
This will be coming back. Because it seems as though that's a continuous theme that nobody ever, you know, they say, well, people were asking, but... You know, they never comes back to the people.
See, that's someone you said who was one of the first gardeners there. Mm-hmm. The very first time I started. Mm-hmm.
His name's Richard Lawton, and he's actually a professor at, was a professor at Michigan.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, in chemistry. Yeah, so he...
Did you have to travel to find him, or did you have to...
No, I got his name through the old newsletters, and then he has kept his... profile on the Wisconsin Alumni Association today. So
is he here in Madison? Or is he in
no, it's going to be a phone conversation.
Oh, it's going to be
sadly, it's still good. Yeah. What I've begun asking them is, what was the garden like? And it might seem a redundant question to ask you what the garden is like, but I think the garden is like different things to different people.
Sure.
So what do you think about most about the garden? Gardens.
I guess two things. The garden is the source of food. And the garden is an opportunity and a challenge to create order and chaos. It's a, you know, sort of a constant battle against, you know, the chaotic side of nature.
Yep.
Try to get what you want to grow, and that's mm-hmm. actually one of the things that I really enjoy about it is the planning, where things go, how I'm going to rotate the crops, and then the sort of the taking what's just a square patch and making it into something productive.
Now, how did you find out about the Eagle Heights Community Gardens?
Well, we live in Eagle Heights. I don't even remember how we first started about it, but there were, you know, ample opportunities to hear about living up Eagle Heights. Although, interestingly enough, you know, the gardens are right there. I applied for a plot and got a plot. I had no idea that they were there. Like, I knew they were somewhere around there. I've been told there was these gardens right next to Eagle Heights, but I had never seen the gardens, even though I, you know, drove past them every day.
Yeah.
And just those trees are just enough of the screen. Now at the gate there is probably a little bit noticeable. There was a sign before, but it's sort of like, I don't know.
People, yeah, they're sometimes hard to see. They sort of blend in. So did you get a plot the first summer that you... How long have you been gardening there?
I've been gardening them 5 years. This is my fifth year of gardening.
That was your fifth year.
And yes, I got a plot. There was not a...
You moved in the fall and then you got a plot.
Moved in in August and then I got a plot the next.
Yeah.
You know, the following year. Yeah, so more or less that. Yeah, I mean, I got my application in on time, and so... It remains true to this day that, you know, if you, at least as a student or resident, get your application in on time, there are plots. And even at that time, there was less plot pressure.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think things were full, but they weren't.
How long have they been over full for?
Well, I only know about the last few years.
Yeah.
And it's gone up and down a little bit. There's been a general upwards trend. Mm-hmm. You know, certainly we've never had as long waiting lists this year that I know. Not in recent memory.
Yeah.
Four years ago, they were, the first I know, they were full. There was a small waiting list. Not a problem. 3 years ago, we did not have enough gardeners. There were plots that we were trying to get filled.
Mm-hmm.
2 years ago, we had a small waiting list, and then this year there is a large waiting list.
Mm-hmm.
So,
okay, so it's
kind of got up and down. Between the 4 years ago and the 3 years ago, what happened that probably affected that is the finger plots were lost, and then we added new plots, not quite as many, but almost as many new plots along the northern border there. You know, those two sister, you know, even though there was a net loss in plots, applications were down quite a bit, and that could have been just a random variation. I suspect the number of people who lost their plots and their plots did not reapply for new plots.
So when...
And then there were these new plots.
So that finger plot was lost in 2004, 5?
This is 2009. This is our third year of those new plots, so... 7. I think we had it still in 6. 2006, okay. I'm not positive about that. You should check.
So why, when did you become chair, and did the finger plot controversy have anything to do with that?
It was related, not to my being chair,
not to your being
chair. It was that year, so 3 years ago, so it was 9-8, it was in 2007. Prior to the 2007 growing season, it might have technically been the end of 2006, or something like that. Losing that window, I became chair because the former chair graduated, and the rule has been, and still is, that the chair needs to be a student, and I was the only student on the committee at the time, basically. So becoming chair was not a big thing; it was more kind of a default. The reason I started coming to committee meetings, which I had done perhaps a year previous, I started coming and then moderately regular came to maybe half or so of them, was actually because of the finger plots. I'd heard about that, and the finger plots were being lost, which was something that was decided even a couple years before that. Like, it was kind of a long time in the works. And I came to the meeting in part to, like, you know, what's with this and what can we do about it? The answer ended up being nothing. It's been decided. Though we did manage, and not through any efforts of mine, but it was managed that year to get them to add those rows on the north that more or less compensated for the loss of the year. But that was the first reason I came. It was like, you know, what's this about us losing plots? You know, what is that all about? I was also curious about just some of the things around the garden, like, you know, the enormous pile of dirt that, you know, weeds slash dirt, like, what happened to that every year or whatever. Yes, it turned out nothing is a big headache. Which we then more or less dealt with actually a couple years ago, although it builds up again. But, you know, there was decades worth of weeds that had sort of turned into dirt there. Huh. It was not very good dirt, apparently, for using in the gardens because it was too full of weed seed. And I was also told not that nutrient rich. I don't know, I never used it myself. I also remember the first autumn after having a plot for most of the time. The first spring, there were some leaves, but not very many, and they, like, were gone like that. So that autumn, like, I collected my own leaves around, and I was like, you know, I had this appreciation for wonderful leaves. And then they started to live through them, and, you know, we had enough. And then, since then, we used to only get leaves from grounds, so now we get leaves from shorewood, and we get lots of leaves, you know. So now there's always plenty of leaves, which is great. But I still sort of remember, like, when leaves were this, like, precious resource, and I was scavenging them myself.
Where did you keep them that winter? Just in a pile?
Well, I used them, so. Mm-hmm. We used probably half our own leaves and half the ones that we delivered.
Yeah. That's great.
And we started, because we started collecting leaves before they were delivered, so it was like, wow, yeah, and I didn't know how many were delivered in the fall. Even at that time, there was a fair number delivered in the fall, just not enough to really last in any significant quantity until spring.
Yep.
And so then we started bringing truckloads, that's going to go.
When did the association with Shorewood start?
Yeah, so that was then. Because it's gone through a couple of phases.
A couple of phases? How
in what
it...
sense? So first they just started delivering leaves.
Okay.
I'm not actually entirely sure when that happened. I think it started happening around the time I started, you know, being on the committee. So probably fall 2006. Probably is when they first started delivering leaves. I'm not sure about that. And then I think it was, yeah, that's right. I think that's right. In fall 2008, they wanted to do something more. This fall 2008 was when we were thinking about the weed pile. What were we going to do with the weed pile? And also, Chris Haskett, who was the garden worker, had become a garden worker at the time. He was a very interested in composting. He had been doing some composting. He also then we hired as a garden worker and started doing composting. And he needed basically big equipment help to make the compost go better. Shorewood, I don't know who approached who, but he got into contact with Denny Liebeck, employed at Shorewood, manages or something like that with their leaf collection, whatever. So how it first started, they started living in leaves, I don't know. I don't know that part.
Yeah.
But then Chris and Denny were talking, and Denny was also interested in delivering greens throughout the year and helping to compost them there. Because basically they didn't have a place to compost. And we had this site here. And so the idea was that they would bring in greens as well as leaves and also use our weeds and help us with the compost and do the piles. It has not yet quite worked out that way. Danny got in a car accident that winter, and so was not really able to do what he was expecting to do.
Yeah.
Through the next summer, you know, he eventually recovered pretty well. But and then there was just, from my point of view, well, even because we had had a meeting with the Garden Oversight Committee, and we laid out sort of this memorandum of understanding or whatever, and then it kind of didn't. It happened prior to the accident, and then it was like a year later, and they've delivered a lot of leaves.
Yep.
It's been great. I don't know that they delivered any greens, even though that was their interest. Mm-hmm. They've occasionally accidentally delivered wood chips, so they've dealt with that one with complaints. They've done some turning of piles and composting, not really enough from our point of view, not really enough to really have the composting working. We don't have much leverage over them because it's kind of something they're volunteer basis, and it's really, it helps them because it's a place for them to put their stuff that's not way long ways away. But it probably helps us more than it helps them, so it's
not
But the oversight can be, last time we turned to they're a little bit like, well, you know, they're kind of only after they're signed the deal. They're like, well, they're doing something, and you know, that's better than they were doing a little bit before.
Yeah.
So it's been good. It's been good for us to look at all these leaves, and it's sort of productive. And it's good in a general sense because, you know, they're not having to use the gas to take their leaves a long, long way away.
Especially now.
But it's not been quite what we hoped. Not
they
so far.
Do they bring the dirt, too? Sort of the dirt compost piles?
Well, so the dirt there is stuff that's composted.
Is it,
I mean, no dirt has been brought in.
Okay.
In fact, a lot of dirt was taken out last year as we're like, what are we going to do with this enormous pile of dirt?
Yeah.
And the final answer was, you know, pay to get it hauled away.
Interesting. Okay.
They got an enormous amount. And they did help us load all that dirt up and get hauled away because they wanted that space.
Mm-hmm.
So they are helpful with that.
They're helpful with that too. Interesting. Okay. So.
But yeah, that dirt pile and the compost yard has been a big part of the sort of committee for at least a few years now.
Just some management. What's been the hardest thing about being garden chair? Are you glad that you've been garden chair? And what's been the hardest
thing? I'm also glad I'm done. The hardest thing is that in this last year, there have been, you may know this, but there have erupted a couple of personality conflicts.
No, not so much.
That came out mostly over the email list. There were some, you know, a few, only a few, but it doesn't take very many sort of angry emails with it.
Yeah.
And then trying to deal with that and manage that has been very draining and not a lot of fun.
Yeah.
It's more or less resolved now. Basically, one of the party that lost their temper more, removed themselves.
Okay. Yeah.
That's good. But it was unfortunate, and, you know. So it's somewhat better now, but earlier this year, the garden committee and some of the meetings, but much more so the email list, was pretty contentious. There were some contentious issues, the multiple plot issue, but then there was these mere personal tensions on top of that that made that much worse. And that was maybe a year or so. That was
true.
The other thing that was hard was when I first started to be garden committee chair, there was a problem where we had just hired a registrar. This was just prior to Natalie. We had hired, actually Natalie, we had four applicants, one of which was Natalie. We had hired someone else, Rachel, her name was, who had been garden worker. And So we had a new registrar and a new committee chair right at the same time, which is, you know, not such a good thing, even though we haven't done it yet. But, so we also knew that, even though Rachel had been garden worker, so knew more about the gardens than I. She and I had some misunderstandings right off, so that didn't help. And then she ended up not really doing her job. I guess she had, she had gotten another job at the same time that she thought was kind of going to be part-time, and turned out to be more full-time. And then she has, like, some problems, you know, crises in her life as well. And so basically she just didn't have time and ended up not doing the work there that early spring, like, all of the applications were coming in. Nobody was handling it.
Wow.
And so that was kind of, and of course I was also very new at this, whatever. So
yeah.
I said that because we scrambled to, like, you know, what's going on. And, you know, and finally she stepped down because she said, oh, I'm too busy and this isn't happy. And we hired Natalie and Emily, worked very hard and caught up with the backlog. And also apartment services helped us some. They dealt with the money side of it.
Good.
They actually started, which they're still doing, and it's helpful. They now, it used to be the registrar would deal with all the checks and stuff, but now when they get an application, you know, because they all come to the office, they immediately pull the check and then just, you know, separate it from registration and cash all the checks. So that's not properly.
So is the garden's bank account under apartment services somehow, or no?
I have attempted to stay fairly uninvolved with the financial side of things.
Hey, somebody else is going to deal with it.
I have not done any reimbursement. I have not, you know, anything like that.
Yeah.
It's difficult. It's somewhat opaque because it's sort of through apartment services, and, you know, so there's just a big kind of delay, and, you know, things like that.
Yeah.
Which kind of been unfortunate. Because there was this incident last year, as you probably know, where we got way overcharged by the porta potty company, and we didn't realize that.
No, by what company?
The porta potty company.
Oh.
Yeah, I guess you haven't been.
No, I haven't been around very long.
So we went with the university contractor, or at least the housing contractor with the porta potty. Had for a couple of years. Last year there was some sort of error that has never quite been tracked down. We got billed exorbitant amounts. The best guess that I've heard for someone in housing, and they're still kind of looking into this, although it's seeming like it was a very small company, and I don't even know if they do they see more, is that somehow in the contract, the monthly rate became the weekly rate.
Whoa.
So
it charged four times?
Yeah, so it became, all told, I think about $6,000 a quarter party through the summer.
Wow.
Which, of course, made a huge dent in our otherwise rather rosy budget future. And we didn't really realize this until basically the end of the summer when we got the other numbers in. And I feel like, well, you know, if I'd been watching things more closely, you know, I could have gotten that earlier. But it was just hard to, because, you know, we don't get the statements until a couple months later and like that. But maybe if I had watched it, because I remember it was when we were looking at the next year's budget, you know, planning, just sitting with Natalie and Jan Sternbach at the Department of Services, I was kind of like, isn't that kind of a lot for the porta potty? And then they started looking into it, and they realized that they were overcharged as well for all their porta potties. You know, it was all the same thing, just do that. But, as far as I know, nothing can be done about it.
Yeah. Oh, how frustrating.
And no one's even sure quite why it happened. It's just that somehow the rate was much, much higher.
Yeah.
Than it was in previous years. It's much, much higher than everyone else did.
Huh.
It was kind of an expensive year anyway, due in part to equipment breakdowns and in part to things that we wanted to do, like looking at the fruit trees and whatever.
And then
we were like wrangling over these sorts of expenses, and then we sort of realized that actually what all our money went to this year was
supported
by. I mean, that's about half our budget.
Yeah.
So
the budget, what is the full budget? I need to interview Gretel and Natalie, but.
Yeah, and I can send you those documents.
Yeah, that'd be great.
I should try and remember to do that. Anyway, the budget's about 12,000.
That's
somewhere
12,
around 000. There.
Okay.
Definitely somewhere 10 to 15.
Mm-hmm.
Varies a little bit each year depending on how many.
And it depends on, that's from plot fees and then what's in what we have in a bank account.
Yeah, not that we have,
basically, you know,
at this point, that much in a bank account.
Yeah.
I don't think interest income has ever been that much. We're actually not, well, it's complicated. It's confusing. Mm-hmm. I've sometimes heard that we're actually not supposed to keep balance from year to year. I mean, it's okay a little bit.
I've heard that come up in a meeting, yeah.
I also heard somewhat more recently that, no, that was okay, but it was set for a specific project, like, you know, replacing pipes or something. So, I know for sure that a few years before I started, the gardens had a fairly significant, you know, maybe 20,000 or so, they're sort of away. And they came out of prison for that and were sort of told that they need to spend it soon or there was a chance they might get taken away by the university.
Wow, okay.
So, yeah, that was also the time that the Garden Oversight Committee was put into effect. And that's when we bought the tiller. I think that's what that was about. Mm-hmm. Again, that's, this happened slightly before we started cutting. Mm-hmm.
But it's just get rid of this money, we'll buy it.
Yeah.
Buy
a work. They bought the tiller.
Huh.
Which has been a very popular investment.
It seems like people, I mean, like having it.
Yeah, you know, there's some opposition to it, but not that much. And yeah, a lot of people seem to appreciate it. Mm-hmm. You know, it's kind of, you know, like how good it really is for the soil and whatever. But for the winds or whatever.
So what have you enjoyed most about being a garden committee chair? I guess what was hardest or what was best?
Well, I think just being able to... I've enjoyed being on the garden committee, and part of that's being PHR, in terms of really being able to contribute to the running of the gardens. And I, like, there are some places where I know we've made real progress in these years. The weed juries is one of them. That's a system that we've
put in place. When did that...
That was about the first year I was on the committee. First year I was on the committee also happened to be about the first year that Will was on the committee, and also Robin joined, not you know, less within that year as well.
Okay.
The weed juries was Will's idea. He was the one who pushed it out. That was the first winter of what we sort of debated about. I was actually more skeptical about it. It seemed kind of heavy-handed to me. But, you know, we came to an agreement about it, it seemed, and it's been very successful. Mm-hmm. And then we sort of revised the limit this year. Like, yeah. So that's been a very helpful thing. I think we've done a much better job at keeping the, you know, basically weedy plots under control and also helping to turn over abandoned plots. Mm-hmm. We've dealt with the enormous dirt pile, although they're still, like, the composting is still kind of not where it should be. We have these huge piles of leaves, though, now, which is a real plus.
Yeah.
So, things like that have been helpful. Also, I feel like our policies are clearer than they used to be. Not that they were terrible, but they have made some improvement. I suppose that always happens just as things come up and need to be clarified.
Uh-huh.
I'd also say that we also have a larger garden committee and more participation. Than we used to. Mm-hmm. And, you know, using the forum now and things like that. We have a much nicer website.
Yeah.
Not that I can take much credit for that. We were just fortunate that we have someone who's very good and very helpful at putting together. David Deal, his name is. He sort of lurks and shouts, he doesn't come to meetings much or whatever, but he does a good job.
Yeah.
I mean, the website. I don't think he even has a garden anymore, but he still does the website. So I feel like there's been real progress made. I also feel like I've really learned a lot about, you know, leading a group and sort of moderating and things like that. I've also learned a lot because of one of the things I do as the committee chair is I sit on the Garden Oversight Committee, which is, you know, all these people from the university. I've learned a lot about university bureaucracy.
Yeah.
And like how these sorts of things work and whatever. And that's been informative. And will probably be useful at some point.
Yeah, that's actually one of the things I wanted to ask you about was, one, how you saw the Garden Oversight Committee and the ways that the garden fits into the land around it as part of the preserve. Do you feel like it's...
We also wrote a mission statement. I wrote that, so I'm proud of that.
Oh, you wrote a mission statement. Oh.
Yeah, it's on our website. Have you seen it? It's down on the lower right.
Oh, yeah, I have seen it. And you wrote it, and it was approved by the committee?
Right, it was approved by the committee, and then also the Oversight Committee.
Okay. So, I guess I'd love it if you could tell me more about the relation, the Garden Oversight Committee.
Mm-hmm. So
your experiences there. And
the Garden Oversight Committee, as I understand, was put into effect less than 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. More than 3 or 4, but less than 10.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I know. Largely because... as I understand it, of this large pool of money that had been built up, and then, like, people noticing me, like, wait, the garden festival has all this money, and so the other thing that happened at that time, and I was probably involved in it, was there was the power plant was built, and so I believe F.H. King Gardens and also some of the cow spots were moved up there, and so the gardens also lost some space, and basically there was rearrangement of space up there. And also in that process the decision to lose the fingerprints. And so I think the Guard Oversight Committee was also involved in that, probably in its formative days. Basically, there was some question, I guess, between the Guardians having the money and then between also some of the land being taken from the Guardians. They're kind of, I guess, it began to be asked, why does the Guardians exist? Does the university care if the Guardians exist? You know, what is this for? How much priority do we give them? This sort of thing. This was eventually resolved by a letter from the Chancellor, the then Chancellor Wiley, that, I should have a copy of her, probably Roman has that said that, you know, he saw value in the Guardians and that, you know, they should exist, and laid out sort of some guidelines for they should primarily serve students and, you know, a couple of things like this. Students, Eagle Heights residents. Basically a page and a half letter. That same letter, or else one that came right on heels or whatever, also was what established the Guardian Oversight Committee. So, I guess it sort of came out of the other sort of format about... My understanding is basically the university discovered that there were these Guardians, and they were like, oh, really? Or at least...
yeah.
And who's running these anyways? Yeah. And do we even want these? And what the heck, you know? Yeah. And you know, there was obviously some advocacy for the Guardians as well, whatever. All this I don't know, except this hearsay.
Yeah.
But it resulted in this letter from the Chancellor that sort of established the Guardians and established the Guardian Oversight Committee. So the Guardian Oversight Committee has two roles. One is to basically make sure that we are in compliance with the policies of the university and the policies of the preserve. So it sort of acts as oversight in that sense. That's the role that probably... The gardeners I'm more familiar with is every so often come to the gardening committee and say, well, the Guardian Oversight Committee says we can't do this. And they do really play that role.
Could you give an example of something they said we couldn't do that?
Well, they were free scope of or whatever. Well, for example, when we were talking about, I can give you that. One thing, there's been a couple of proposals in the past to make the beehives in the gardens. Mm-hmm. Or not in the gardens, but like near the gardens. That's something that the Guardian Oversight Committee was... I'm not sure about risk and liability. That's something that they would have had to sign off on it. Exactly. Another thing was, for example, when we were talking about maybe allowing, you know, a couple drive-in days per year or something for people to deliver things, the RSA committee, and they didn't say absolutely not, but they said they were pretty hesitant about it. Where they've definitely stepped in a couple of times is in terms of priority. That's something that's important to them, is that priority goes to students and to residents. Where the Guardian Committee tends to feel that priority should go to returning gardeners, because that's really what's good for the gardens, is to have continuity, to have experienced gardeners. And so even though it's not that there's an absolute disagreement, but there's definitely some tension in priority there. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we actually kind of have both as priorities and try to dare them, but...
Yeah.
And as long as there's not, like, a real crunch, then it's not a problem. There was something of a crunch this year, and, you know, it could be even more the future, so to say. Basically, financial issues, you know, they have to approve our budget. Not that they've ever given us a problem with that. And they very much try to let us run our own affairs as much as possible. Oh, but that's another place where they stepped in. They stepped in when we were having budget discussions last year and said that the budget should be... should be calculated so that if everyone paid at the lowest rate, the student rate, we would have enough money to cover expenses.
Huh.
Because, I mean, realistically, a good third or so of the gardeners are faculty, community members, whatever, pay at a higher rate. Also, we always have some member from some money, a significant amount actually, from people who don't pay work day fees. So there's always more, you know, does that mean, but you're not quite sure how much, whatever. Mm-hmm. And so, they, you know, they said, you know, so that's something, that's an example of something that the Guardian Oversight Committee stepped in and said, no, this is how this was done.
Yeah.
Basically, money, anything having to do with the money, they pay attention to, and anything having to do with, like, basically land use.
Which seems like everything in the garden.
Well,
not really.
Some things, you know, if people were to drive cars in, when we planted the apple trees, they were not opposed to that, but that was something they had to approve.
Yeah.
You know, things like that. Most things as far as, like, you know, policies and whatever is not as much. So that's one thing the Oversight Committee does, is they, you know, have to approve certain decisions. The other thing is that I didn't realize until I started attending Orsike meetings, although I think now the more people recognize it, because I sort of made an effort to emphasize this sometimes at Agari meeting, is that there's a lot of resources that the university just provides for the gardens. And the Garden Oversight Committee is kind of the gateway to that. So often we'll be having some sort of, you know, problem or something. It's like, how do we do this? And they'll say, well, you know, I know this person and whatever who can maybe do that. And sometimes we might get charged for it, sometimes we might not. A very clear example is that we have, I think it's 4 hours a month. I'm not positive about that. We have a certain small but significant number of hours that the apartment services grounds people will put in for the gardens. Mostly we use it to have them help manage weed piles with the bobcat, because we can't, we don't have that sort of equipment and you can't use it ourselves and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So for example, that's something that's provided, the apartment services. And they provide also, for, as another example, when I was saying, when we had that problem where we didn't really have a registrar who was, you know, the registrar role wasn't being fulfilled.
Yeah.
And we have all these applications piling up. The apartment services stepped in and said, okay, well, we'll at least deal with the checks. And then, you know, cash those checks and deal with the money. And so that was something that, you know, at a garden oversight committee meeting, we were like, hey, we got this big problem because there are all these, I think they brought up actually, because they're the ones that are getting these, and you know, what are we going to do about it? And then, you know, we sort of problem solved about that.
Yeah.
And of course they, you know, all the hiring has to go officially through them. We make all the decisions for the hiring. They've never, that I know, need to do any of our decisions or anything. I'm sure they technically could, but it's, I don't know they even review them that much. Mm-hmm. But they are the ones who have to do all the official hiring and go through that process, and so they give us apartment services. The Garden Oversight Committee basically is apartment services, grounds, cows, and the preserve. Mm-hmm. Essentially who's on it. And because those are the people who are sort of involved. We get help from grounds every so often. You know, we'll either step up and haul something for us, or you know, do this or that. Or, you know, and so there's a lot of those sorts of resources. Or like one of the people on the committee who works for grounds, he's a supervisor for grounds, but he has a few times for us when we were used the brush cutter to mow around the perimeter at U House's gardens when our garden workers weren't quite getting done and it wasn't clear like where it should be done or whatever. He went down and did a couple of times.
Okay.
And he's used the stump grinder down there quite a bit. I think he kind of enjoys that. So he's ground a bunch of stumps for us.
You know, nice.
Things like that.
Very good. So what's it, how do you feel sitting when you go to the Garden Oversight Committee meetings as a member of the Garden Committee?
Well, I feel like
You're a non-voting member. Right?
No, that's not true.
Oh, okay.
Well, so first of all, things are more or less done by consensus.
Okay.
I don't know that they're really, you know, it's
voted.
It's not like it so much comes down to a vote. They're sort of done by consensus. You know, I would say if any member, or at least only if like a couple members, were not okay with some given thing, it would not happen.
Mm-hmm.
But no, I don't know how it all exactly breaks down. I feel like a full member of it. You know, I feel like I have a say as much as anyone else does. Natalie and I are the ones who come.
Okay.
Anyone else can come.
Mm-hmm.
On occasion, like one of the garden workers has come or something. But basically, Natalie and I are the ones who are expected to come and who do come.
Mm-hmm.
Natalie, so the registrar has, yeah. Right.
Okay.
So the registrar, it's not Natalie anymore.
But
in any case, the registrar and the president are the ones who are expected to come. And I feel like we have as much say as anyone else, in some cases probably more say, you know, just depending on what exactly the issue is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the idea of it is that really, not every single person, but people represent sort of different interests and different, points is the right word, different interests and different, you know, sort of backgrounds. They represent different parts of the university. So there's different things that certain people are interested in, or certain people have input in, or know something about, or don't. And there's certain things that the registrar and I know something about, and certain things that we don't, and, you know. It's very much a collegial, you know, atmosphere. It's very friendly. Actually, even the couple times I have been, tension hasn't really even involved the gardens that much. See,
it hasn't involved the gardens that much.
The Garden Oversight Committee oversights a couple of things besides the Eagle Heights Gardens, the Eagle House Gardens.
Uh-huh.
Specifically, the F.H. King Gardens, because they're right there, and the Cowell's Pots, they're right there.
Okay.
There were some water drainage issues. The Cowell's Pots that were kind of contentious.
Mm.
about who was going to pay for, like, the remediation and stuff.
Uh-huh. That's
but even with that, it was not, like, you know, it was not like a big hoopla, you know?
Yeah. But the Garden Oversight Committee wasn't established to oversee the MHK.
Well, FHK and the cow spots were not up there.
They weren't up there until the Garden
about
Oversight
the time,
Committee.
Yeah, around
so
that.
Just sort of
it was part of that same
part of their oversight.
That was part of that same transition when all that happened. Because they used to be down where the West Cogen plant is now.
Interesting. So when you said that you liked understanding more of what the bureaucracy of the university was on the Garden Oversight Committee, what were you specifically thinking about?
I remember.
If it is this nice...
Well, one thing for me was just kind of how the budgets were done, how sort of fuzzy it all was. Like, you know, the expenses and the income were supposed to be equal when you set your budget. So it was kind of like, well, you know, maybe we'll spend this much. And as long as it has to be that way, you don't know how much you're going to spend for supplies. And actually, it's gotten less fuzzy in last year. We've tried to make it a little more accurate. But I was amazed at what exercise and abstraction was the first year.
Like, if we just put in these extra digits, it'll all...
So, like, well, let's put that for capital projects. Let's spend that much for, you know, miscellaneous.
Okay.
Yeah, we tried to estimate some things, but... Also, for example, how immensely risk-averse the university is. If there's anything that comes up that might, you know, someone might possibly get injured in some foreseeable chance. Like, it's a big, big deal, and, like, no way that's going to happen. That's best to consider somebody one of the things. For example, with the beehive proposals.
More stinging would happen.
Right, exactly. You know, that's the danger.
That is the danger.
And, you know, in fact, it's kind of wrong. One of the people on the committee actually is allergic to bees. He himself says, you know, it's not a problem. You're careful, you know. But other people are like, I don't think risk management is going to go with it.
Yeah.
You know? Actually, just this last time, I mean, F.H. King actually did get approved to put a hive up in the preserve area.
Yeah.
I think it was one of these things, like, people kept asking, and finally, well, you know, maybe they had a little more thorough proposal than some of us did. I don't know. But okay, so, actually, as far as I know, that went out there this summer.
Yeah, I think it is out there.
Yeah, it's out sort of in the East Savannah, as they call it.
Yeah.
Which is, it's sort of past the old orchard that way. I actually have been out there looking. So, that's it.
Do you feel that the people on the committee see the gardens as a part of the preserve, or as something
something
different, or how is it? Because
so
it's interesting to me how
I think that's
tries to fit
complicated.
Into the preserve. Yeah.
So first of all, only a couple of people on the committee are from the preserve point of view. A couple of them are, but only a couple. There's also from grounds. There's also from apartment services. I think the people from apartment services sort of see the gardens as part of the apartments. Because I mean, they largely serve. Probably half or so, at least, they serve apartment residents. And, I mean that in a very good way. They see that as something, they have a lot of investment in making sure that the gardens run as well. Because their residents care a lot about that. They have a lot of residents who are gardeners, and, you know, they get flack from residents if things aren't going well in the gardens. So I think they sort of see the gardens as a service. And there's some validity. It's kind of an extension of the apartments. I think the person from the preserve definitely sees the gardens as sort of part of the preserve and a valuable part of that. I think there are people who do not see the gardens as a valuable part of the preserve, but they're not on the Garden Oversight Committee. And I don't know who exactly they are or whatever.
Yeah.
I think there are people in the preserve committee who are, you know, more prairie or more whatever and less gardens, but, you know, there's always... And the competition with that committee changes and stuff, too, so I don't even know who it is. I mean, I think perhaps the people who are least invested would be the people from grounds, but they're also very helpful. And, I mean, I think everyone there really appreciates and values the gardens and puts in a lot of effort to make sure that things do run well with it and that what needs it done. I think one thing that's nice, every year we do two garden tours, one of the Eagle Heights Gardens, one of the Eagle Heights Gardens. So the whole committee goes out, like, in May and then June. And looks around the gardens. I think that it's really nice, not only because, of course, everyone gets to see and talk about issues and whatever is there, but I think also the Oversight Committee gets to see, how much nicer the gardens look this year than last year, and feel also that, you know, they've contributed to this thing that's working well. Mm-hmm. So I think that probably helps to simplify it. Some of the people, for example, the, you know, the reserve manager is up there even play a bit more than that, you know. Some of them are probably not, but so I think that's helpful in that way.
Yeah. Kathy definitely likes it up there.
That's very nice.
Do you, if you, have you talked to gardeners? Do you think they see the gardens as part of a preserve or as part of the apartments?
Good question.
I don't know where gardeners talked
to that many people. Mm-hmm. I would suspect the gardeners do not think of the gardens as part of the preserve. Mm-hmm. If anything, maybe more by the apartments for those who are residents, or just as the gardens.
Or just as the gardens, yeah. That's sort of the feeling that I've got.
I mean, I'll say honestly myself, I don't really think of the gardens as part of the preserve. I do probably more so than I did before. I got involved. I guess I think of them somewhat as part of the preserve. But
do you use the rest of the preserve? Do you, like, go for walks?
Some. I do. The parts that are up by Eagle Arts.
Yeah.
You know, I definitely do. Go walking and stuff.
It's like your back door.
Yeah. I mean, I used to more before we had a child.
Yeah.
Before I was quite so busy. It's very, you know, the gardens are very different than the rest of the reserve.
They are, yeah.
You know, and so I think there's, yeah, I would say you and I myself don't really think of them as part of the reserve. Mm-hmm. You know, I kind of do, but I largely don't either.
Yeah.
I think that maybe a little bit as part of the apartments, but I just think of it as sort of the gardens, you know.
Yeah. They're definitely a different place.
Yeah, and there has definitely in the past that, you know, land is limited, and there's definitely been conflict and, you know, tension over whether gardens is the use of the land there as compared to the earth, things that could be, you know, where that should be part of the reserve. Like I said, which I know about mostly secondhand, because the people in the Garden Oversight Committee, in particular Kathy, as you know, is very much pro gardens, very, very much likes the gardens, very supportive of them. But I mean, she at the same time, if the idea comes up, like, well, can we expand the gardens? You know, no, that's prairie land, you know?
Yeah.
So even as supportive of the gardens as she is, there's definitely...
I think she has a different, difficult task in balancing.
Yeah, she has to balance everything
out. We don't pay rent anymore. Do we pay rent for the land that the garden's on?
Who's we?
The garden committee.
No, we... like pay the university or something. No, I mean, we're part of the university.
Used to pay rent. That's why I'm
really
what I was wondering. Yeah.
So the garden committee out of pot fees paid rent to the university.
Yeah.
I had no idea.
Yeah. At least at the beginning. Yeah.
Yeah. I wonder.
I don't want to end it.
I'll be very curious if you can find that out.
Yeah, I will. It used to be
rented land.
Land because they didn't. It was actually directly to the College of Agriculture because they used to be hayfields. So they would only give up the land if the garden paid them for their loss.
It's not unreasonable, I suppose.
No, I mean, it's not unreasonable. But I think it's really
interesting.
But
no, that's by them, sir.
Yeah. You know, so the garden's always had an odd place in where it fits in the university. Uh-huh. You know, is it part of the university? Is it not part of the university?
Yeah, and I think now, certainly by any official sense, it's part of the university.
Yeah.
And I think that some people, you know, very much have that sense as well. Mm-hmm. But that's...
Yeah. So it's definitely changed somehow over time. Figured out how. I feel like there's other... something else. Oh. What... how were plots turned over during the summer before the weed jury existed?
Well...
Sorry to skip back a ways.
I don't think there was a systematic sense. I'm sure if someone had emailed the registrar and said, hey, you know, I've moved away. Mm-hmm. I don't need my pot anymore. I'm sure it would have been given to someone else. Assuming there are people on the waiting list. Remember, we didn't have such a long waiting list. But I don't think there was any sort of, like, aggressive finding out who had abandoned their pots until the rejuries came. And in fact, I've been told by people who've gotten there, you know, 20 years or whatever, that there used to be very large numbers of abandoned plots during the summer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. hard to keep up a garden. It's more work than...
Yeah, and, you know, people leave, too, you know.
And
you, sometimes you have more on your mind than, like, letting someone know that, you know, your garden, that you haven't been working in that much anyway.
Yeah. I'm sure you know when your move coming up. Not so easy just to figure everything out.
No, so I think that's been one of the major improvements in gardens in the last few years. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I think that's part of the reason that the gardens lost space when the rearrangement happened and things were moved, is because there was a feeling, a probably accurate feeling, that the gardens were not really using their space efficiently.
Yeah.
So there were both, at that time, people with many more plots. There were people with 4 or 5 plots.
And four or five plots.
Oh, at least four at that time.
Wow.
And there were plots that were, you know, going, you know, just sitting fallow that were clearly large enough to abandon plots. So, we definitely have a lot more gardeners than we used to. Speaking, I mean, even looking at the last few years, we've had a few more each year. I think, we don't have the numbers back, unfortunately, but I think back like 10 years or something, probably we have a lot more gardeners than we did at that time. Even though we have some fewer plots, we've made much better, more efficient use of our space.
Why do you think there are more people who want a garden?
Population growth?
Population growth, okay. I mean, I don't know that you would have any ideas. Maybe you've thought about it.
There might be cultural changes, too. I don't know.
Who knows?
Okay. But Madison's a growing area, you know.
Yeah, it is.
It's also kind of... A certain segment of the garden population turns over rather quickly to students. A certain segment, you know, are like community members who have a garden for a long time. Mm-hmm. And then a certain non-significant segment are those who sort of start out as students and then become faculty or staff or whatever.
Yeah.
And keep their garden.
Keep their garden.
Actually, over the last 4 or 5 years, what Natalie knows, when she was looking at the numbers, is that the largest growing category. It particularly happened 1 year, so I'm not entirely sure how statistically significant it is, but definitely the largest growing category was faculty staff. And I don't think it's mostly, it might be in part staff members or faculty members being first-time applicants for a garden, but I think it's also part of people whose status changes.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of people do go from student to back staff, so.
Right. So I think that's probably part of the increased numbers. Although that certainly doesn't explain, like that would explain over, you know, maybe a 5 or 10 year period, those sort of demographic changes. It wouldn't explain over a, you know, however many year period.
Yeah.
For that, I don't know.
Who knows?
But certainly if you look under that period, I'd imagine the university itself has grown quite a bit and stuff like that. I don't know any of those numbers, but I'm sure the university is bigger than it used to be. You know,
it must be. I haven't looked at those numbers either, but I'm sure that it must be. Everything's growing.
And whether our growth merely parallels that, or is more so, I don't know. Mm-hmm.
Another question. Always a question. Do you have any good gardening stories? What was your favorite gardening memory? Not as chair, but just as a gardener in that plot. Have you been in your same plot for all 5 years?
I have.
That's nice.
Well, I told you one about getting the leaves that first fall.
That's a good one.
It's been very satisfying having the plot, kind of learning to garden. I'd not done a lot of gardening before. My parents had done some, but you know, there's something that I kind of knew how to grow, like beans or something. I really didn't know how to grow. It was satisfying to learn how to grow different things and try out different varieties of crops. You know, you can get advice and stuff. One of the main things was garlic. I didn't know how to grow garlic the first couple of years. It took me a few years of asking and trying and whatever before I got it down. So I think one of the most satisfying moments really was about a year ago when I had my first, like, really good garlic harvest. And it lasted all through the winter and all of that.
So good.
And so
good. That's what I'm looking forward to.
Because that was a lot of, you know, while I'm coming.
And your garlic is delicious, by the way. It's really good.
Did you plant some of it too, or are you going to?
I will, yeah. I probably will plant some.
Yeah, it's probably a little early too.
But I've been eating it. It's good.
Yeah, and I told you
fresh
that.
Garlic is good.
Which is now that you think it's that garlic is all descended from a garlic plant that was growing in the plot, you know, that came up during that summer when I first got it. Because I had. had other varieties. You know, I bought some at Young's and I bought some at the grocery store, and mm-hmm. I got some elephant garlic from my dad. Uh-huh. And, but that was the stuff I liked best. Mm-hmm. So
the mystery Eagle Heights garlic.
Yeah, exactly.
Maybe it's been there for a long time. It's really adapted to.
Maybe garlic. I doubt that actually, but. But you never know.
You never know. Is there anything you thought that I might ask you that I haven't asked you?
That's an interesting question. The immediate answer is no about me, about love. Yeah. It's just a question to ask in an interview. I'll have to remember that if I'm interviewing people.
It's a good question, isn't it? So don't just say no, but...
Well, I guess I didn't really know exactly what mm-hmm. the focus of your study was. The one time I was interviewed before, a few years ago, the person was very much focusing on perceptions of gardening and perceptions of gardeners, and, you know, just kind of odd, because, you know, they see us first, like, you know, do you think that anyone looks down on you because you're gardening or something, and, you know, they're like, well, that, except for one person who, like, really had this kind of complex almost,
really?
Where she thought that people thought, like, gardeners were messy, and it wasn't somebody at Eagle Heights, or someone at another small community garden, huh. It's like her parents didn't approve or something, and it was really weird.
Crazy. I admit that I'm usually dirty because I spend a lot of time in the garden. Not that anybody looks down on me.
Yeah, no. I don't know how much of it was in her mind. But yeah. Like, one of the things was, I guess, still, so, you know, she was in some small garden that was on land from a little local church somewhere, you know, mm-hmm. somewhere on sort of the near west side. Mm-hmm. And she was always worried that, like, you know, they thought their gardens were too messy, and they're going to... I asked her, you know, have you complained about it? She's like, well, no, but, you know.
Yeah.
You know, it's just kind of in her head that people didn't like gardens. And uh-huh. Which, granted, gardens do look messy. Mm-hmm. Silly late in the season when they're actually still quite preoccupied, you know. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But, the plants are starting to die, but they're still...
So I don't know if I expected you to ask me those questions. Mm-hmm. Those are some of the questions I asked in the past. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and she asked us, like, you know, what do you value in the garden? Mm-hmm. Those sorts of questions. I guess maybe I expected that.
You can sort of answer that.
I kind of did at the beginning, it's true. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you just
asked in a slightly different way.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think you did answer that right, of course. Yeah. It's always a nice, I guess another memory of your activity, it's always really nice, sometime in the, like, February or whatever, mm-hmm. making a little map and planning where you're planning that garden. Mm-hmm. It's a really nice thing to do on a cold winter day. You know, Adrian and I will get together and do that, and, you know,
decide what
get out the pastures there. Maps and, like, remember where things have been planted so we can do the rotations. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's a little sort of, to get everything rotated right, it's a little bit of a trick, and so that's kind of fun.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
You know, thinking about, like, where the soil's better and where it's not. Because mm-hmm. there's a real gradient in our garden. I don't know if it's true in yours, but the corner where our raspberry is very clay soil, and the opposite corner is very fine soil. There's basically a gradient just along it there. I think it just has to do with the slope. I think it has to do with the slope. I think that side's basically a little bit dug more into the hill.
That's interesting.
It's also better this year because I put carrots in there last year, and when I put in carrots, I put in peat moss and vermiculite, so it really helped. But still, I think it'll probably always be that corner is not as good soil as the other corner. So I think it's just dug into the hillside a little bit.
Yeah, it is a little bit on that side of the ground, isn't it? Are there any questions you have for me about what I'm doing?
I guess
or
I have
just
that
in general?
Like, yeah, well, so what is the focus of the study, it seems mm-hmm. as if there's clearly a large historical focus.
There is a large historical focus. So I became interested in the gardens, one, because I'm a gardener, and I found them and I love them. Two, my academic focus is still unfocused, but I'm interested in landscapes and how humans sort of form landscapes or natural places are formed, human environment interactions in general, as well as food systems. The gardens are a good community food system, I suppose, if that's something you could call them, but like how where food comes from and how people interact with their food and work. It's like a garden, a good place.
Do you know the person, I don't remember if you were me that time, there's someone who came in and talked about the beginning of the... I don't know if I could find his name. Maybe I could. Mm-hmm. He was also doing interest in the Guardians to a lot of people were. Not the history of the Guardians, more like actual food production. He was doing actually a very large study. He was really, really... They were actually, among other things, apparently they were doing, they were estimating productivity satellite photos. Because someone asked him, like, well, do you want to know, like, you know, how you keep records, like, what people bring out? He's like, oh, we're going to do it for the satellite photos. But he was, you know, also going to be doing
it. Was his name Vincent Smith?
That sounds familiar, yeah.
I think I need to get, he's in the landscape architecture department.
That could be. I just remember being impressed that compared to various other people who had come to do some research on the Guardians, like, he clearly was well thought out, had some funding, like, you know, he was at a different level.
Yeah, very different level. So...
But he was very interested in the Guardians as food production.
Yeah, as food production. And that's not really my focus, obviously, but it's definitely part of it because that's one of the things that people get out of the Guardians. Mm-hmm. But
that's probably the primary thing, I'd say, people get out of the Guardians.
Yeah, I think that from people's responses to the survey, it's definitely what people see as their reason for gardening.
I mean, we talked about this a little bit when we were drafting the mission statement, like, you know, why do people garden?
So I was talking to my advisor, and I had some ideas of looking at things that are really too big for master's thesis work. I'm interested in, like, also heritage crops in the Americas. A lot has been done in South and Central America, but not much has been looked at for, like, heritage vegetables in the United States and where they're from and where they still are and how those are transferred around.
So are vegetables that actually originated in North America?
Yeah, or heritage varieties of, like, kitchen gardens that people had, you know, kept in. There's a big section of those in Appalachia, and sort of there's a southern seed legacy, the Seed Savers Exchange in Iowa. So there's some centers where people have been growing and continue to grow sort of these heritage varieties of crops that they're hoping to. So I was like, oh, maybe I can do something with looking at where those are and how they're actually transferred and what those mean. My advisor, well, nobody knows anything about the Eagle Heights Community Garden history and what it is as a place. And it's true. I mean, nobody does. I go around and people are like, so when did it start? And it says on the website, 1962, not right. You know, right. Like, it's all these, just all these funny, so the history is part of it. But then I'm also...
So where have you, what's been your best source of information in the history?
People. So far, it's been the people, but also... But mostly talking to some of these people.
So you said 1962 isn't right, which may well not be. I obviously have no clue. How do you know? Who?
Well, because the first thing that tipped me off was that the first Seembach Library doesn't have all of the Eagle Heights newsletters. They only start in 1961. But even the 1961 newsletter was talking about garden news and how, garden news is, you know, the garden is plowed, or they, you know, so, like, well, so 62 is not correct. I think it was either 59 or 60.
I see.
I'm not sure.
Do you know something about the changes in location? Because I've been told that it used to not be where it is now.
This is its third location. Okay. It used to be, when it first started... I wish I had brought a map, but there were only a few hundreds of the Eagle Heights residences. So University Houses is here, and then the 100s are like here, which maybe the two, you know, they had a few of these. But the drive goes up here and then loops around. But there was another road maybe halfway up, and it was up where the 700s are now, I think. That was its first location, but it was just there for a year.
Oh, yeah.
And then it moved directly north of University Houses, where there used to be an apple orchard.
Directly north of
University? North of University Houses.
So is that, like, where the U Houses Gardens is now? That's not north, that's more east, isn't it?
That U Houses, I think... The funny thing is, I'm focusing on Eagle Heights. And people who I ask about the U Houses Gardens... People who were at Eagle Heights there was a very distinct split between faculty and the graduate students, so they don't even know about the U Houses Gardens. They weren't part of the same.
Yeah, until the whole GOC thing and all of that, they were totally separate gardens.
Completely separate gardens, which is, you know, which I haven't even started getting into, but I think maybe part of my reading. So No, directly north of you houses where there's another development, where there's another hundreds.
900s,
group,
no. Maybe.
Probably the 900s.
Yeah, that's actually where I live.
Oh, that's where you live.
So Okay. Maybe that's where...
You were right on top of an old apple orchard and the old garden.
I did not know there's an apple orchard.
Yeah, so there was... This is a funny story. You'll like this story, too. Uh-huh. That was there... Depending on when it started, it was there from probably 60 or 61 to 66. Uh-huh. When they then moved to where we are now.
Oh, okay.
And you had to start paying. But this... Because the old apple orchard was not College of Agriculture land, it was already sort of planned for development.
Uh-huh.
They weren't paying rent. But the man who told me about the land and the apple orchard told me a very good story about how it was used at some point for some student in the agriculture was testing herbicides.
Oh.
For apple orchard, you know, on apple orchard plants. And he said, well, it's the funniest thing. They were fighting crabgrass, of course. They all these weeds. But some people's plots didn't seem to have, they had grass, but not a lot of other weeds, and their plants were coming up fine, and everybody was sort of jealous of all these plots that seemed to be doing really well without as many weeds as we have.
Uh-huh.
And then one day, all their plants just died.
Oh, no.
So there was this herbicide that stayed in the ground for years and years after it had been used in the apple orchard. And then he said, well, so we decided that we were going to try to, you know, not have gardens in those spots.
Uh-huh.
But that at that point, they were plowing it every year and then relaying it out every year.
So it was by spreading it.
Well, no, it wasn't actually... that was a question I didn't ask him, but I was confused because it wasn't... They just forgot to mark well where those spots were. And he's like, oh! So then when we went to lay it out, we realized that we didn't mark correctly where the spots were. We just sort of had to guess at where these places are. So it was a broadly... I guess... People who grew corn, they grew fine because that's not a broadleaf plant.
Yep.
But all their tomatoes came up and then died, and all their beans came up and died. It would be so awful, can you imagine?
Yeah.
And then the gardens moved to where they are now in 66 after some negotiations. I think there were a lot of negotiations. And we actually may have the same irrigation system, unless it was replaced, as they had in 62 or 63.
Oh, that's possible.
Because the person who was in charge, the committee chair who was in charge of moving, I guess in one weekend they moved all of the irrigation from that old site to our new site and laid it out.
Yeah, I can imagine. But were the gardens their current size at that time? Or approximately their current size?
I think approximately.
Really? Okay. I guess I'd always guess without having any reason to think so. They started small and they grew, but I don't know. I don't know that that's the case.
I'm not sure of exactly how big they were in 66, but I don't think
one
that
thing
they
I can
grew
tell you is that the irrigation in the irrigation pipes for like the 300s or so, and I think most of the gardens are metal. The ones up in the finger plots were at least part plastic. Now maybe that's just because they were replaced at some
point. Interesting. Yeah. Yeah.
But
he just, like, his greatest memory of the gardens was this one weekend where he directed all these volunteers in moving the irrigation from the old site to the new site. And he had the plans, and he had to tell people where to go with different sections.
Uh-huh.
Like, that was his one real memory.
So this was the guy who was a professor in Michigan? No, I'm going to talk to him.
This was, his name is Bob Robert House, and he was a doctor, is a doctor. No, they're all retired. He lives in Vermont now.
So
I'm sort of tracing. So my interest is in sort of the history and how it's changed over time, but also doing some of this thinking or having to write my proposal, what I made it sound like my research would focus on was also how boundaries and categories are negotiated in this space. So, like, how people understand what's that, but, you know, where's the preserve and where's the garden? Different communities of people that use the garden. So, there are so many distinct communities. Like, who you interact with when you're at the gardens. And who, you know, what different people think of the gardens as, you know? Some people are like, the gardens aren't really the gardens. This is my garden plot. Or it's this place where it's supposed to be mm-hmm. everybody coming together as a community.
That's true. There's definitely very different opinions on sort of the communal nature mm-hmm. of it or not. Mm-hmm. You know, as evidenced at some level by people who put our fences. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And the debates we had, I mean, I spoke to you right there for the debates we had maybe a year or so ago about fences.
No. Sort of what was that about?
Well, fences are a... There's something, you know, a small, practical problem in terms of mowing, because mm-hmm. they're kind of hard to mow along and they tend to collect weeds. They're also, from some people's point of view, and that includes my kind of a, you know, unsightly... Well, so some people found them unsightly. Mm-hmm. And also, I mean, for me, a community garden shouldn't have fences. Mm-hmm. You know, it's contrary to the spirit of it. Mm-hmm. Other people say a community garden is a place where you can do sort of whatever you want. Mm-hmm. You know, you can put up a fence if you want to put up a fence.
Yeah.
And, you know, you should have a committee telling you not to. And so there was a lot of debate. We eventually decided not to. Fences were technically not allowed in the rules, but that rule had not been enforced. Mm-hmm. Part of my concern was that we shouldn't have rules that aren't enforced. You know, we should either enforce it or change the rule, you know? Mm-hmm. Yeah. And what we ended up doing was changing the rule.
Okay.
To say fences are discouraged. Mm-hmm. But not... Right. But then the other thing we did for the first time this year, and I think we'll continue doing, is those plots that turned over mm-hmm. this, you know, spring that had fences, we took the fences out. Mm-hmm. I actually led that one through and, like, get rid of all the fences.
Yeah.
There was definitely fairly heated passions, and it was really, what does it mean to be a community garden?
Yeah. So, I mean, so there are those social aspects of boundaries, and then the ecological aspects of, you know, the weed problems in the garden, which are very much...
Which is both a sociological and ecological,
it's definitely, like, what's a weed?
You know, you should have, well,
Humphrey
yeah.
Humphrey is around because people are planting it. Mint is around because it didn't used to be considered a weed, and now in the garden, it's a weed.
As an example, you know, one of the people who was very, in recent times, opposed to the weedy plot policy, was so partially on cultural grounds. He said that, you know, not every culture weeds.
Yeah.
And, you know, we don't have any right to sort of make that our standard.
Mm. Yeah.
He had had a neighbor from India who, you know, did not. He came and planted some tomato plants, and mm-hmm. more or less ignored his garden, and came back and harvested tomatoes, and actually apparently did fairly well. But only gardened uh-huh. 1 year, and said that he had gotten a weedy plot notice, and, you know, he was offended by that. Mm-hmm. After that, you know, so mm-hmm. it's another debate.
Yeah, so...
Yeah, it's really too bad you weren't part of the committee for the last year or so.
I know.
Like, you'd have your research done.
I just finished. Hopefully I'll just talk to people who are on the committee for the past year. Yeah, but then, like, the weeds are also interesting. Or the ones that we have, especially.
I mean, I could forward you tons of emails. Sometimes
you should. You should.
I can do that. I have them all. I could go for, you know, you'd have to sift them. I could show you huge. I forward you lots of emails that really touch on, you know, what is the community? What is the media? How's the community?
If you'd be willing to do that, I'd love to have that. Yeah.
They were all things that went, they were mostly things that went actually out over the committee list. It wasn't like they were personal or private or whatever.
Okay, yeah. Don't send me anything that does seem personal or private, but definitely.
Sure. Well, even the things that came to me personally weren't really personal or private.
Okay, you know? There you go. So send them along. Yeah, so, you know, and then you have Canada thistle, which, you know, is a weed that spreads through its root system, uh-huh. so it easily gets from one plot to another, and dealing mm-hmm. with it isn't really an individual issue, even if gardeners would like it to be able to, you know, just monitor their own plots. So there's all sorts of, then there's temporal boundaries, like a lot of people do things in their garden that the person who had the plot before them do it and did in their garden. You know, you get perennial plants.
Right, that's true.
Yeah. You know, if your garden was sort of laid out, you're going to lay it out that way because there's a lot less work.
Yeah, that's true. That's a good point, too. Yeah, there's a lot of interesting things there.
So I haven't necessarily decided.
But
exactly
at the same time, it seems like there's a lot of historical information, too. So if it has been gathered together in a nice repository, I don't know where that repository is, so...
I don't think it has, because nobody thinks that it has. And everybody sends me, oh, well, this person should know all about that, the history. Like, no, I've already talked to that person. Somebody sent me there 10 other times. But that's what happens. So, I'll definitely keep you informed, if you think of anything that I... A place that I should look for, a person that I should talk to.
Yeah, your list of pretty cool already seems well deeper than mine. One person that you might talk to, actually, though, asked me about the former registrar, Rebecca.
Yeah.
I could get you her email address.
That would be
she
great.
Actually, on rare occasion, even still weighs in, like once a year or something. So I think her email address is still active, or I still have an email address. Her husband or something.
Yeah,
I love
that.
Talk to you, and she would know. I think that she would probably know more about, like, you know, the community and the GOC. The other person who certainly knows a lot about that is Mary Beth, who we've probably talked to.
I have talked to her for a little bit, and I think she knows a lot, but I said, and so I'd like to interview. She goes, oh, no, you don't want to interview me. I'm like, I'm going to interview you. But I think because she'd be a good person.
Yeah, she's obviously very knowledgeable.
Yeah, I need to sort of ask her again and again to let me interview her for a little bit. If you could just say it's not painful, that'd be great. But, yeah. I think she was trying to trace down a little bit of the history herself, and then.
Yeah, so I mean, that might be. Yeah, that might spark the carrot. So, you know, I found out a lot from these people. You know, we can talk about it.
Yeah, that's true. That is a good carrot, actually. So I know some things. Okay. Oh, thank you so much. I really appreciate it. This is.
Yeah, it was
really
fun. I like this sort of stuff.
Yeah, me too. I'm glad you do. I like that.